All right, we're back. The beer cast, extreme beers part two. Extreme. All right. In this episode, we're going to be continuing our discussion of extreme beers, beers that push the boundaries. We're gonna discuss a little bit of blending beers, breweries that are doing some interesting things blending beers. We're also going to discuss some of the strongest beers ever made, and I guess the pissing match that erupted in that regard between BrewDog in Scotland and Schorsbrau of Germany, which was pretty hilarious if you paid any attention. Again, I'm Josh Hunt.
I'm Jay Campbell,
and we're from Beer Run, and I guess we'll get started talking about blending of beers. So beer blending, there's been a lot of folks that have gotten into blending beer lately, whether it's a sort of a collaborative effort like the Avery Brewing out of Colorado and Russian River out of California, who both discovered that they had a beer called Salvation, which both were Belgian styles. One was a Belgian quad?
I think so, and then the other was a Belgian sour, I think.
I thought it was
Belgian golden.
Yeah,
Belgian golden,
it was golden ale. So there's been some history of breweries suing each other when they figure out they have a beer of the same name. These guys had a creative solution to that where they decided to blend their beers and call it collaboration, not litigation ale. Which they've brewed about three or four times now.
They're actually just released batch number 5 here recently. So
excellent, really good Belgian beer. But there's been some others. The Firestone their anniversary every year they do a blend, and how do they do that? Do they have somebody?
They have their limited brews that they basically store up over the year, and then they bring in along with their brewers and their owners, they bring in some wine producers, and they all get together and then must be an epic night of tasting beer and try a bunch of different blends and decide which one is the best for that year.
Yeah, I guess they have a master vintner come in, and those are all barrel aged, from what I understand.
For the Firestone Walker likes to barrel age all of their beers. That's right.
They use a lot of American oak and all kinds of. So the 14 was their most recent, and the 13 before that. Those were the only ones that I'd tried. But what incredible beers! I mean, you have this master vintner blending these beers that are, you know, all kinds of different styles and barrel age with different things like port, whiskey, wine, dessert wine. I mean, just it's pretty remarkable. And you know, these beers are expensive. They come in big bottles, but they're really worth. I mean, if you have a couple of people together, it's really
a special occasion whenever you open a bottle of Firestone Anniversary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a little bit about blending. There's lots of other people locally. We just were lucky enough to get a keg and a firkin from Blue Mountain Brewing out in Nelson that they call their Bourbonator. You want to talk a little bit about the Bourbonator?
Yeah, it was a blend of their Hibernator, which is a Doppelbach.
Now, where does that style Doppelbach come from?
It comes from Germany. There's the Bock lager style, and then there's the Doppelbach, which is typically a few percentages higher in alcohol, popular for the colder months a lot of times.
This is probably my favorite beer thing to talk about. Have I gone into this before, the Bock? The genesis of the style and what that word means and everything.
Lead us down that path.
All right, I don't know why it is, but I love to talk about this. So Bock, you know, German and English aren't really that far apart. I mean, apparently they were related at some point. I can't speak any German, even though I like to think I can speak English pretty well. But So the word Bach, I've come to learn, is remarkably similar to our word for buck. So you know, meaning not like a dollar bill, but like a deer, you know, a male deer. So what you'll see in the Bach style, which is basically in Germany, you have your lager style, which is your standard strength. What's the German lager come in at?
Typically 4 to 5.5, somewhere in there.
Right, somewhere in there. And then you have your Bach, which is typically a spring release, which from what I understand, they would release in spring. You have your Maibach. But basically any Bach style is going to typically have a picture or a depiction of a ram many times on the label.
And a lot of times people here in America will call it a goat, but it is in fact a male sheep, a ram that they're
right.
Using.
So the etymology, is that the study of words?
Sure.
Not entomology, which is insects, I think, but the genesis of that word is, you know, is the same as our you know, buck. So it's a symbol of spring. And so these Bach beers are typically a little bit stronger, coming in at what, 6.5, 7?
Yep, 6-7% in that range. And then the Doppelbach would come in around 8-10%.
Right. So the Doppelbach meaning your double buck. So basically these are beers that were brewed in the springtime to well, at least in the example of the Bach, to keep, you know, in the spring in Germany, when you're out at the beer garden, it's still a little chilly at night. So you need, the brewers decided that they would be friendly to everybody and make a beer that is a little stronger and would basically put a little color in your cheek and keep you warm as the nights would, you know, sort of cool down, nice during the day, but still a little chilly at night. So they wanted to warm you up a little bit. So they made a lager that was just a little bit strong. And then you'd have the Doppelbach, which comes in a little bit stronger than that. you know, up in the 8-9%. So we digress completely, but the Bourbonator, you were talking about.
Yeah,
the Bourbonator.
It's a blend of Blue Mountain's Hibernator, and then they this year they made a beer called Long Winter's Nap, which we had both of these beer just in their own state on draft at Beer Run. And then they, Long Winter's Nap was a triple Hellesbach, 12% alcohol thereabouts, and light in color. And they blended the two of them and put it in a bourbon barrel for 100 days, and thus created the Bourbonator Barrel Bach.
Which was just remarkable, I thought. Incredibly, I mean, it came in apparently around 10%.
Yeah, and it smelled like you were drinking a glass of bourbon, but the smooth was incredibly finished. No alcoholic burn whatsoever.
Yeah, really, really,
really nice treat for the
mouth. Really well crafted, which, you know, it's just again, I know we've said this before, but what a joy to have these great local breweries around here doing such good stuff. So, okay, so that's a good example of a blend. We had alluded to this pissing match that erupted between these two breweries, we were talking about extreme beers and sort of perfectly segues into talking about BrewDog out of Scotland, which is a European brewery, which, you know, the Europeans are sort of known for being sort of staid, and they've been doing the same thing for hundreds of years. That being said, making great beers for that long, but not right. Really being doing a whole lot radically new. I mean, mm-hmm. They were the ones who sort of held the torch while America went through this whole sort of crappy beer period.
Yep.
And you know, if it weren't for Europe, I don't know that the whole craft beer revolution in the States would have been, you know, allowed to ferment,
yep,
as you will, and sort of reignite and come back. So maybe you'd talk a little bit about BrewDog and sort of their style, even though they're a European brewery.
Well, BrewDog is a very young brewery still at this point, and it's a couple guys that have a punk ethos to them. They even have an IPA called Punk IPA.
Rock, you're talking about?
Yeah, punk rock. And they just like to mix it up. They're one of the many new European breweries that are drawing inspiration from the American scene, whereas up until about last decade or so, Americans drew the inspiration from Europe. Now Europe is drawing inspiration from America, and they are kind of leading the way for that side of the pond to make more extreme beers.
And they're out of where?
Well, they have a few brew pub locations. Is Glasgow?
I can't remember. It's a small town in, but I just was saying Scotland.
Yeah,
I just
out of Scotland. But they do have a few different locations at this point.
So these guys, upstarts, you know, punk rock upstart brewery, Scotland. you know, what was the great Scottish movie by Danny Boyle? Trainspotting.
Yep.
You know, think Trainspotting. These guys are, you know, radical Scottish brewers. So they came out with a beer called the Tactical Nuclear Penguin.
Yeah, exactly. And that upset a brewery out of Germany called Schorschbrau.
Okay, but first, what's the deal with the Tactical Nuclear Penguin?
Tactical Nuclear...
Why is it important?
Well, it is a icebox style, essentially.
Okay, so we talked about Bock. Yeah. So what does icebox mean? I mean, it almost sounds like the word... When you say ice, it almost sounds like the word, the English word ice.
Exactly. And what you're doing is you're taking the beer, freezing it, and...
So it's a strong lager that you're freezing, and then what happens when you freeze it?
When you freeze it, the water is going to freeze and form ice, whereas the more alcoholic part of the liquid is going to stay liquid.
Okay, so what do you do with that ice?
You skim the ice off, and you have taken water content out of the beer.
Okay, so what's left over?
Higher alcohol liquid.
A boozier beer.
Boozier beer. So, and they actually did the treatment three times on that beer. So.
Okay, but was it it was a stout, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So it's not really a strong lager. It's actually a stout that they used an Eisbock, which is a German method.
Their base beer was a beer called Paradox, which is a 10% Russian Imperial Stout in style.
Okay.
And they took it to the next level by starting with a 10% and skimming off enough ice to get to 32%.
And okay, but they all didn't they also barrel age it too?
Yeah, it was barrel aged for it was either 6 months or a year beforehand before they started freezing it.
Okay, so using these two extreme methods, freezing the beer, you know, pulling out the ice and barrel aging it, they got the ABV up to what?
32%.
That's incredible, right? I mean, that's unbelievable.
You're almost in liquor category at that point.
Okay, but it's still beer, right? Because it's not being distilled, right? I mean, you're
no distillation whatsoever
right.
on that.
I mean, you're cheating a little bit by barrel aging it and freezing it. All right. So then what happened? The Tactical Nuclear Penguin came out.
It came in at 32%, and that upset a company called Schorschbrau out of the Franconian region of Germany, which had a beer called Schorschbock, which was 31% alcohol, which was also an Eisbock. And they had started with an actual Bock lager.
Okay. So it upset them because they had the record for
the world record
beer in the world.
Okay. Strongest beer. And they immediately came back with Schorschbock 40% alcohol.
So they bumped it up to 40%. And from what I understand, they then sent a letter or sent a message. Excuse me, message. They sent a message to the BrewDog guys and said, "Hey, you know, this is our 40% beer, and if you guys ever want to really learn how to make a beer strong, we can show you how to do it."
Right? Yeah, and this obviously upset the boys from BrewDog, and they replied with a beer called Sink the Bismarck, which was a 41% alcohol beer.
Now, there's some historical significance with that name, right? Sink the Bismarck.
Yep. A famous ship sinking.
A famous German ship that was sunk by the Allies, I suppose.
Exactly.
And just as an aside, if you ever want to see some really funny YouTube videos or Vimeo or whatever you like to use, do a Google search on BrewDog and Tactical Nuclear Penguin and Sink the Bismarck. And there's a whole series of really funny videos. Yep. I mean, they fully, you know, went into the whole newsreel, 1940s newsreel kind of format to make these hilarious videos.
Yep.
So So Sink the Bismarck was what style?
It was actually a what they called a quadruple IPA, but what most people would just call a double IPA, and then using the same ice Bock kind of treatment to it.
And barrel aging.
Barrel aging, yep.
And so they got that up to what?
41%, which was then beat by Schorsbach, 43%. As you can see, the Germans aren't as creative in their naming of the beers.
So we're sort of getting to the end of our time here, but the BrewDog guys ended up coming back with another beer, right?
Yeah, and so far this is the end of the story, which is from July of last year. There was a beer called The End of History, which BrewDog made 9 bottles of, and they packaged them inside of taxidermied stoats and squirrels and sold for roughly $700-$800.
Which a stoat is basically like a Scottish squirrel. It's a little bit bigger.
It's like a Scottish land squirrel.
Right. So it's a little bit bigger than a squirrel, and they got, from what I understand, they got road-killed stoats and sat them on their hind legs and then inserted these large format bottles inside the main body cavity of the stoat.
Yeah, and they even dressed up the stoat and made him nice in little tuxedos or little kilts. But that beer came in at 55% and still has not been passed. Yeah.
So if you can get your hands on one of these, I strongly suggest it. It's quite the collector's item.
Yeah.
So The End of History, I guess, refers to a book which was written by either a mathematician or a philosopher, or something that I've not had the pleasure or the capacity of reading just yet, but it's kind of an interesting story, pretty funny. So I guess we've run out of time.
Yep.
But we thank you guys for listening and hope to see you soon at the Beer Run. Signing off, I'm Josh.
I'm Jay.
And remember, drink a lot of beer.